Father, you're the one who examines our ways, our motives, who knows every aspect of our lives, who loves us genuinely and unconditionally, whose love towards us is not just a performance-based, responsive kind of love. It is a love that goes beyond our understanding. That even when our heart is divided, it is you who pursues us. It is you who engages us. It is you who invites us. And my prayer is that that love and that grace would shape our hearts, that we would be a people in keeping with you, in step with you. So have your way in us. God, settle us in this time today, but also call us onward with a real heart of expectation. Thanks for life. And thanks for your gift of life in your Son, Jesus. Amen. And I'm excited to engage the call that is unique to us as well. And we must press onwards. You might be wondering why Stephen is sitting here. I'm not sure either. We regularly sit together. Stephen and I, each week, take time out to encourage one another, to check in with one another, to do a little bit of life together, but to dream together, to pray together, get on with our unique, you know, respective purposes that we have. But then together we press on towards the goal which Christ has for us. And so together we're going to carry a little bit of this call as we go out. I was reading an article recently, and I want to just sort of share with you the gist of it, some of the points of it. And young people who are here, children who are here, I want you to just tune into some of the things I will say. There'll be some images on the screen that, even if you want to draw them, because you'll go back and reflect on it. You'll think about it if you draw the pictures. But in this article, it talked a little bit about the courage and the confidence that it takes to pursue great ventures. The courage and the confidence that it takes to pursue great ventures. The courage to dream. The confidence to believe. The courage it takes to engage. And the confidence of the value of what we are about that compels us to go forward. There's a confidence in the call that compels us to go forward. And this is what I want to bring to light. You know, there are so many great dreams and ventures that have captivated the hearts and the minds of individuals and nations. And there are many in the midst of those that have come to what seems a premature end. Consider this, the account of one of the great, although relatively unknown, Chinese explorers of the late 1300s, early 1400s. Okay? Late 1300s, early 1400s. His name was Zheng He. He commanded 7 great expeditions under the flag of the Chinese. His fleets sailed as far as East Africa and Arabia, often along somewhat explored trade routes, but in a way that had never been attempted before. Listen to this. In 1405, allow your mind to just engage this for a minute. In 1405, his expedition consisted of 27,800 600 men. In a fleet of 62 treasure ships, supported by approximately 190 smaller ships. Now get this. If we can have this first image up. His treasure ships were about 127 meters long, 52 meters wide. He had 62 of these in this first endeavor that he took, each one with 9 masts, unrivaled in size and capacity for its day. In fact, this ship at the bottom is the equivalent of the Santa Maria or the Pinto that came across the Atlantic and discovered the Americas. And this one is paraded as a ship of greatness. Look at Zheng He's. Dwarfs them. Dwarfed the Viking ships that were known in the North Seas. Dwarfed them. But his support vessels varied in size from 50 meters to 100 meters, each one of them far exceeding the Santa Maria or the Pinto. In those ships, he had developed water tankers that carried a month's supply of fresh water for all the ships. He had equine ships that could carry enough horses for his armed horsemen to ride into the lands they discovered. Unrivaled. But in the early 1400s, there was a change in emperors, and in the 1420s, the expeditions were brought to an end. Done. A ship of this size was not built again ocean faring until the 1900s, when iron hull ships were developed. 500 years. I also think about the race of the late 1950s to the early 1970s, and it was known as the space race, and it took on incredible energy, and it took on all sorts of imagination, and nations from all over the world rallied behind this idea of space discovery and particularly lunar landing. NASA, a part of the great, you know, global space race, and the dreams were of a rival exploration, and even settlement, and finally resourcing, mining, harvesting. In 1969, dream becomes reality when broadcast across television are the first steps on the moon's surface. Over the next 4 years, there'd be a total of 6 manned landings, total of 12 men setting foot on the moon's surface. Then, in 1972, at the peak of this flurry of excitement, it was brought to an end. And here's the thing that happens. In both these eras and so many others, great steps forward in discovery and accomplishment, comes this fairly abrupt closure with a couple of common considerations entering the argument. And when you do some of the study on what brought about the abrupt cessation of some of these things, there are 3 themes that come up. The theme of accomplishment, the theme of risk, and the theme of cost. The theme of accomplishment comes up when we say, hey, we've done it. The race was to land on the moon. For goodness sake, we did it. The race was to create these massive ships to travel to unknown lands. An emperor comes and goes, look, we've done it. Why do we need to keep pushing on? Look at the risk. Look at the cost. The arguments against NASA, look at the risk. There was loss of life. Look at the cost. But a sense of accomplishment and a crippling fear of cost and a resistance to risk can ultimately be destructive to vision and purpose. And there's a reality of a phenomenon called the gravity well. Now, that might be a foreign idea to you, but it's this fact that every body of significance carries some gravitational pull. And that gravitational pull, and this image here sort of shows it, at the closest center of that body, that where this gravitational force is strongest, you just get drawn right into it. You know, sitting here, that you're only sitting because of gravity. But the further you get from that source of the gravitational field, the freer you are. And now with the next space race, where they're talking about Mars and beyond, they're looking at how far out does this gravity field go, and how hard and how long will it hold us? Because the moment we break it, the moment we get out to a certain point, our movement and our liberty increases exponentially. And we can look at that in the realistic gravity of Earth. But people say things like, you know what, you've got to get your feet back on the ground. You've got to come down to earth. You've got to get your head out of the clouds. Anyone ever said that to you when you're dreaming? You've got to come back to earth. You've got to get your head out of the clouds. You've got to get your feet back on the ground. You know what? Those are enemies of discovery and exploration and dreaming and accomplishment, when we just want to frame it in the known and what we call reality. And we together want to invite you to dream and to engage. You see, I believe there are gravity wells that are associated with familiarity. The gravity well of familiarity, that as long as we stay close to that familiar, we just get stuck there. The gravity well of comfort, that, oh, don't unsettle me, don't make me uncomfortable. But the longer we stick around comfort, the deeper that gravity well becomes to hold us right there. The gravity well of security. The gravity well of apathy. The gravity well of complacency. They want to contain us. They want to drag us backwards. And there's a gravity well associated with success. And success can be our worst enemy.
I want to introduce you to a model. It's a model which I was shown maybe 6 or 8 months ago. It's one that I use in my day-to-day job in the business world, where I guess I'm called to serve. And it's one that as I've reflected on it, I've realized that it applies in the business sphere. It applies to me personally, and it applies to us in the context of our gathering here at Good Life. It's a model that was shared to me by a friend of many of us called Dr. Robbie, and he calls it the cycle of leadership. And I'm going to put it up on the screen now for you to have a look at. And you may have seen this. We have touched on it before. And basically what this model says is there can be this risk that when we reach to this point of success, and then further on we move into this position of significance, it becomes this watershed moment, a fork in the road, where we can make one of two decisions. We can either continue in the loop, in the direction that we're going, and head into that satisfied area. But the only road after that is indulgence and deception and ultimately destruction. Or we can choose at that fork in the road to actually head down this innovation and creativity space. And for us at Good Life, we've been, you know, operating for many, many years, even decades. And we've seen some amazing things take place. We've seen our center grow. We've seen its influence on the community, you know, expand. But I reckon we're right at this point there, that juncture again, where we have a choice to make. We can either head out to the innovation and creation loop, or we can choose to become satisfied. It's easy to read the headlines of your own story and think we're doing an amazing job. But we've got to make that choice to continue to move forward, to continue to expand. And that's exactly where we are today. Not in some literal sense, in an absolutely physical sense, as we do this development and the whole renovation that's taking place. Now, we're going to go back there, and we're going to be back there next week, and you're going to stay. If you haven't been there, you're going to get a glimpse of the amazing things that are starting to take place. But it's not finished yet. We've got a long road to go. We've got a good another 6, 8, 9 months, however long it takes to finish this. You're not going to walk in next Sunday, and it's going to be this brand spanking new place just yet, but you'll get a vision for what's to come. And this area, when we start to head down this innovation and creation, we'll just go back to the other one for a sec. Sphere out to the side. What happens then is we come right back down to the bottom and into survival mode again. It's uncomfortable. It's tough. It's a new building. We work out how it works. It means we've got to expand. It means we have to, have more people. And with more people comes more problems and more challenges. But it is one of the most exciting places we could choose to live. And for us as a gathering of, a faith community, we can never settle for the satisfied place. We can never settle for just being in that place, of thinking we've made it. We've got to continue to look beyond the horizon, to pioneer again, to look for ways that we can influence our community. What's the next project? Tim's heart. He's already got a list of other building projects we can take on once this one's finished. And 101 different programs that we can engage in. But I'd much rather be under a leader like that than one who doesn't give a rip. Let's continue to move forward. Let's continue to innovate. And this, as I said, applies to you, us as individuals as well. Let's never just be satisfied with where we're at. I've seen it too many times where individuals and corporations think they've made it. And it does end in destruction. It ends in destruction. The best place we can be is in this God-given place. This is the outworking. This is the practical. And if we go to the next slide, this is the heart behind it. If we're going to enter into this innovation and creativity loop, then it has to be done with a spirit of humility. It has to be done with a spirit of gratitude. And finally, it has to be done with a spirit of generosity. This next stage for us as we venture into all that God has for us in this building project, it can't come out of a heart of, we've made it, look what we've built, look what we've done, look what we've achieved, we've got such amazing facilities. It has to come out of that genuine, humble, generous spirit that says, God, you have blessed us, so let us bless our community. You have given us so much, and we want to invest it into this place and into the people that we are called to love and to serve. That's the heart of it. If we miss the heart, the practice and the outworking will fall over. Yeah. It was just before Christmas, and I was, for the organization I work with, we send out a whole lot of Christmas cards to the different partner organizations that we work with. And I was down in Mooloolaba sitting at a cafe just thinking around what I was going to actually write in this card. And as I was looking through the scriptures, and I came across this verse. And it's just a short little verse, and it's found in 2 Corinthians chapter 9, verse 15. It quite simply says this: thanks be to God for his indescribable gift. Thanks be to God for his indescribable gift. And obviously in the context of that season, it was talking of the gift of Christ that he is to the world. But as I've resonated and thought and processed and pondered on this one verse, it's actually become something that I've held onto and has become quite precious this last 6 months or last 4 months. It's something that I've realized that God has given us all this incredible gift and this place that we can serve and gifts and abilities, whatever it might be. But he's got this indescribable gift that we get to be a part of. And for me, Good Life has been an indescribable gift of my life. It has been a gift in my life that I am so, so grateful for. This is where I met my wife. This is where I met my kids. Not met my kids, had my kids. I was married in this place, and there may well be a rumor out there that my wife didn't think I was all that flash at the very start. It may or may not be true. But we met at the local youth group. My kids were born here, as I said. I was given the very first opportunity to speak on a platform and preach back at Emmanuel College, which is just down the road here. And Doug, you know, gave me that opportunity as a young, probably 19-year-old to speak some dodgy message on shoes or something like that. But he believed in me and gave me the opportunity. And that has been an incredible gift in my life. And as I think back at other events, I've learned to lead. You know, I've led the youth group. I've led the worship team. Some of you may not know that, but there are way more accomplished musicians here these days. Good Life has been an indescribable gift in my life. It's not just a church. It's not just a gathering on a Sunday. It is something that has left a mark on my life that will be there forever and forever. Camilla Gallo, she wrote a book called The Storyteller's Secret. And she made this quote, "The gift of our past matters most when creating a vision and a culture for the future." I am so grateful for the gift of my past. I am so grateful for the men and women I've got to know as a result of being as part of this community. I'm so grateful for the men and women that have led it over the years and I've had the privilege of serving under, because they have shaped who I am today. And it truly has been an indescribable gift for me.
Deoxyribonucleic acid. Or DNA, as it might be more commonly known, is a molecule that carries the genetic instructions used in the growth, development, functioning, and reproduction of all known living organisms. Let me say those four again. It's the genetic instruction used in growth, development, functioning, and reproduction of all known living organisms. And I really believe there is a DNA that does exactly the same thing in all living organizations. And there's a reality that there is a DNA that is imparted at conception that is essential to the life of that organism or that organization. And the characteristics of a kind are passed from generation under generation, and characteristics that will define what that organization or that organism will be, how it will look, and even what it might be capable of. And this DNA was really there at the conception of Good Life. And this DNA strand was imparted that would define what Good Life would become, who we are today, but yet still what we may accomplish and we may yet be. How many in this room were here at the conception of Good Life? Hands up. One, two, any others? Three, four, five. Six. Okay, six. Six people that were part of this conception, and many of you may not know that you are actually right now sitting in that place of conception, that birthplace of a dream that was and is still to become all that Good Life has purposed. Good Life was born out of Marucci Baptist Church that would become Life Point. And in that, and what you still see in Life Point today, is this DNA of expectation and this DNA of vision and this DNA of generosity. And it's funny, like some of you here may be sort of sitting in these chairs and being like, kind of comfortable here. These are way better than our plastic chairs. And they have early services. They're 9:30, or there's, man, this is seeming good. I got some great news for you too.
Phil told me this morning that last year, a few months back, they paid off LifePoint. They paid off the building. And they just see that as God's faithfulness. But you know what? Why we got in here late today? Because they had an AGM. And you know what they announced at their AGM this morning? We're not satisfied. In fact, we're going to build. We're going to build. In fact, we've got wasted space out here. What we're going to dream and build is a mezzanine floor with actually a great cafe, a cafe like Good Life's Cafe. We want to see this cafe that really serves our community. And we want to put in a chipmunk sort of kids play zone. And we want to, they're building. So if you don't want to be a part of something building, growing, expanding, that's, don't come to LifePoint. You see, when there's this DNA of expectancy, we don't want to settle. If you were here a few months ago, you've heard my head in the clouds dream of what Good Life's property and facilities could become as a hub of life for the region and beyond. Not just the building we have now, but buildings that would embrace arts and would embrace creativity, and houses that would deal with emergency housing and needs, and move Lifehouse onto the property and get some facilities on there that we could do locum psychology and counseling through and really see the place explode in its impact. It's vision, it's dreams, but it is born out of DNA. And some of the DNA markers of the Good Life community are these: love and grace and forgiveness and passion and purpose and generosity that in turn creates a space for health and hope and wholeness for whoever should come through that entryway to the property. That's what we want to be. We don't want to just be a place of gathering for an hour and a half on a Sunday. We want to be a hub for hope and health and wholeness for the community that we exist to serve and then beyond. And obviously, there are characteristics that have an element of commonality with the greater body of Christ. That's why we resonate with LifePoint and so many other churches. Because Christ is at work in our midst, calling us onwards, conforming us to His likeness. But there are also those that make us unique. Because there are so many unique needs, and no one gathering of believers can serve them all. But we need to be responsible for what we're called to. But there are also elements that are essential to our longevity. And what Stephen referred to of this cycle or this circle, the moment we become satisfied, we begin to introduce elements that have little to do with longevity. And I hope that this will stir us to think. You see, there is what I just call the challenge of the three T's. And if you want to, you can write these down. The challenge of the three T's. And I bet you deal with one of these. The first T is trust. Because whenever we embark on these dreams and these initiatives and these, you know, journeys that we have in Christ, the first thing we genuinely have to ask ourselves is this: do I trust? Do you trust God? Do you really? Do you really take Him at His word? This is why we are a church that is anchored to the Word of God. This is why we actually continue to read the Bible and let it make inquiry of our lives. Do we trust that His Word is enduring, that it is truth, that is life-giving, that it is shaping to who we are? Do we trust Him? Do you trust the leadership of Good Life? Do you trust that we genuinely are men and women who are seeking God's heart and seeking the good of the people of this church family and the good of our community? Do you trust that our intentions are right? Do you trust the executive leadership? Stephen speaks as a member of that executive team. He and his wife have been a part of the executive. These are questions, because if you can't trust leadership, follow someone you do trust. But I promise you, and I say this before God, that we are men and women who are intentional about pursuing the heart of God. We are not just intentional about pursuing our own ways or fame. I wish, you know, last Thursday night that more could have joined us, but we did it as a part of the executive. We went into that developing building. We went and we stood on the property, and we've done it a couple of times, and we just continue to pray, God, have your way here. It's not about our name. It is about your name. That's our desire. And I want you to know that. I want you to hear it. Do you trust? The second T that we might struggle with is tenacity. How long do I hold on? Oh, people have been talking dreams. People have been talking this stuff forever. Well, how long are we going to hold on? Because I tell you what, there are things that the Scriptures talk about. Jesus says, one day the heavens will part and I will come back. How long are we going to hold on? Because there's trust. But then there's tenacity. Tenacity is that white-knuckled grip that says, I'm not letting go. I have a white-knuckled grip on the fact that I believe God has a purpose in my life. And I know that I am part of this work in Good Life. I don't doubt it. And I tell you, in the last place I was there white-knuckled holding on until God pried my fingers off it. And that's how I promise you I will be here. Do we have the tenacity that even if it's taking longer than we thought, even if it's more uncomfortable than we thought, even though I'm getting tired, are we willing to hold on? Are we willing to encourage one another? Hold on. Hang on. These are the big challenges, but I'll tell you, there's a third one. First two, the challenge of the trust. The challenge of the tenacity is the second one. And the third one is the challenge of the tithe. Yep, he said it. Because there is a DNA, and generosity is a part of it. But you know, when I did that mapping of that property, of what we could develop, the things I just talked about, if our church genuinely tithed, which is just that first 10% of what God calls us to, you could do something like that in 3 years. And that's just what God says we're responsible for to Him. And that has to do with trust. And that has to do with tenacity of holding on to God. But it's a deep heart question. God says in Malachi, test me. Test me in this one thing. Test me. And see that I don't come through. I ask you honestly, what's stirring in you right now when you hear me talk about giving? Because I was watching a movie. I found the clip but couldn't work out how to download it. There's an old movie called The Cross and the Switchblade, and it's a story of David Wilkerson, and I love it. He's having this meeting, and he entrusts these New York City gangs with the offering. And they go amongst the people, and this one, Mau Mau, which is one of the gangs, holds this box in front of someone. And you see this guy pull his wallet out, and he looks in it, you know, he's guarding it, and he takes out this note, and he puts it in this bucket. The guy looks in the bucket, and then he looks back at him, and then he shakes it in his face again. You're never going to find that here. That's not my intent, and it's not why I bring this up. This is not a fundraising event, I promise you. It's a question. But it's a question we must wrestle with. Because when it comes to the tithe, there is a deep question of trust. And there are some people that have gone ahead of us in the Good Life vision who have had the capacity to give well and truly above that tithe. There's a generosity that goes way beyond that. I actually believe tithe is the responsibility before the generosity, but you can wrestle with that. Where are we at? If we really took it on board, in 3 years, we could do stuff that would blow the minds of our city and our state, our nation, influence our world, our four spheres. And so I ask you this, is there a gravity well? Is there a gravity field associated with any of these things that hold you back? What will need to happen to propel you, to propel us forwards?
I still remember very vividly the very moment my parents said to me that we're changing churches. Marucci Baptist, as it was then, now Life Point, that was my home church. I'd known it for 14, 15 years, however many years it was that we were part of that gathering. We sat on the end of their bed and Mum and Dad said, boys, we need to have a talk. We feel like it's time to step out and do something new and go to be a part of a new church. At that time, Narelle and Doug and Marty and Phil and Chris and Lisa, they'd had their 1 week by themselves and we're up to week number two of Good Life. And that was the week that my family started going to or join the Good Life story. I remember it so clearly. It was such a significant defining moment in the story of my life. And I would encourage each of you, particularly those of you who are here as young families or as singles yet to have, sorry, as singles or as couples yet to have kids, the decisions you make around the place you are going to invest into a community through a faith community holds tremendous significance for your children. These kids that are sitting here colouring in at the moment, you have no idea where they may end up in the years to come. You have no idea what is sitting on the floor at your feet right now. There could be presidents, there could be politicians, there could be doctors, there could be surgeons, but what they will learn in this place will equip them for all that life brings their way. It is important for you as adults and as the heads of your home to make decisions to invest your life into a faith community. It will raise your kids up more than you could ever imagine. In all my time at Good Life, I have this incredible sense that this next stage we're about to walk into is the most significant. That there is the most potential and opportunity to actually live out those dreams and visions that our founding fathers could only envisage. And it's not about a building. You know, if we walk back through those doors next Sunday, looking to find out, okay, you know, I'm really interested to find out how this is going to meet my coffee needs next week. Or I'm really interested to see what they've done with the gym because I really didn't like where the running machines were. Or what about the pool? Is it going to be big enough so I don't have to clash heads with the person that's coming down the other way? We've absolutely missed the point. We have absolutely missed the point. Because it actually has nothing to do with us. It has everything to do with the community that we're called to serve. It has everything to do with advancing His kingdom. I want to read a scripture to you. Well, scripture might be a bit loose of the term. It's from the NGV, the New Good Life Version. It's 1 Corinthians chapter 13. If we build a high-class sports facility with all the best gym equipment, a 25-meter pool that offers fitness, learn to swim that is second to none and some of the best organized sports programs on the coast, but do not have love, we are only a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal. If we have a cafe that serves amazing food and incredible coffee, all in a beautifully new purpose-built facility, which provides the perfect place for people to connect with each other, but if we don't have love, we're nothing. If we run all the best programs to help families, singles, men, women, young and old, to navigate life's journey, with meeting rooms and function facilities of excellence that serve our kids, our young people, business and community groups alike, but we don't have love, we gain nothing. Because love is patient. Love is kind. It doesn't envy. It doesn't boast. It's not proud. It does not dishonor others. It is not self-seeking. It is not easily angered. It keeps no record of wrongs. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. It always protects. It always trusts. It always hopes. It always perseveres. And my friends, love never fails. The more I journey in life, I realize that love is absolutely the key to living an effective and empowering and influential life. And for us at Good Life, if we build a facility, a monument to our greatness or to all that we've been able to create, we will fail if it is not undergirded with this foundational principle of love. Because as Tim has said so many times, God sent His Son to this earth because He loved us. He loved us. And we should love just the way that He did. You see, it's not about a new pool or new facilities or a new cafe or more parking or more classes. It's about people. It's about creating a place that people find worth. It's about building a place where people know that they belong and that people matter. And if we can use those facilities to enable more people to experience that sense of belonging, then isn't that what it's all about? It's not about a building per se, but man, buildings help. New facilities help. A new cafe is going to be amazing. A new pool is going to be amazing. The new meeting rooms are going to be amazing because they enable us to connect with more and more people in our community. This is the DNA that runs through our veins as Good Lifers, as followers of Christ. This is the DNA of our founding fathers and all those who paved the way before us and positioned us on a foundation that will launch us into the fullness and the opportunities that lie ahead in the years to come. As a way of wrapping up, I want to read to you from the People Matter document. This is just the last page, and if you haven't read this, I would encourage you to. And it says this: we are all faced with choices and decisions on a daily basis. Some choices will affect us more than others, and some choices will affect others more than they affect us. As followers of Jesus Christ, we are called to serve others rather than seeking to be served and serving our own interests. Jesus Himself said, "I did not come to be served, but rather to serve and to give my own life on behalf of many." We live in a world that is highly focused on self. Self-awareness, self-development, self-preservation, self-assertion. But self-focus easily becomes self-centeredness and quickly deteriorates into selfishness. We are determined to live a life with a focus on and a commitment to others. Healthy relationships are based on love, acceptance, and forgiveness. A great guide to living in healthy relationships is found within the biblical references to one another. Love one another. Encourage one another. Serve one another. Prefer one another. Greet one another. And forgive one another. A healthy community, family, or church is made up of healthy relationships focused on one another. It all comes down to acting in love and being intentional. Intentional interests, intentional encounters, intentional conversations, intentional care, intentional compassion, intentional service, intentional action, intentional service, intentional humility, all motivated by love. And maybe today is a day to be intentional. A day to be intentional about how we're going to serve and how we're going to venture into this next chapter of the Good Life story. You see, we're going to walk out those doors today, and next Sunday we're going to walk into the new doors. We're going to walk into this next season of our Good Life journey. And I think it's beholden on each of us to check our hearts, because as much as it's a physical stepping into the new property, I reckon there's something that's got to happen in our hearts as well. And say, God, I'm walking into this new season, but I want to do it with the right attitude, the right heart, and the right motives. And that's to see your kingdom grow. That's to see your kingdom advance. That's to see you use me in the sphere of influence, whatever it is. So we're going to stand together, and I ask you to do that now. And we're going to move into this song. And I ask you to just use this time to allow God to examine our hearts and say, what's this next step look like for us? What does this next journey for us as a gathering of believers look like?